Hello, my name is Jane Arnold, and I am the Humanities Collections Coordinator for the MSU Libraries. I will be your host for the interview portion of the Michigan Writers Series. Tonight, we're pleased to have two well-known Michigan writers at our first presentation, Lauren D. Eskelman and Lev Raphael.
Raphael,
thank you.
Like the painter. Or the Ninja Turtle.
Lev Raphael. Their work represents the far ends of the mystery spectrum, but I hope we will find something to talk about.
Or we could just sing Over the Rainbow and then that'd be all right.
Okay. You start.
No.
Lev, how do you describe your novels? Are they mysteries, crime novels?
I would describe my Nick Hoffman series as an academic mystery series or academic satire.
What's the origin of Nick Hoffman? He's gay, academic, amateur sleuth. You write lighthearted send-ups, but they have very serious edges of homophobia and anti-Semitism. Can you elaborate a little bit on
no,
the origin?
No, I can't. Well, Nick grows out of 13 years of experience in the academic world. He is a vehicle for social satire of all kinds, and you can't be in academia long without realizing that it's an environment eminently suitable for satire. So he grew out of my own experience there. And actually, he and his partner Stefan first appeared in a short story where Stefan's ex-lover comes to dinner, and after I finished the story, I thought it would be a really interesting novel if the guest was killed. And eventually I did write that. I won't reveal who killed him, though. That would spoil it for readers.
No, it's too much fun finding out. You are what has been described as an escaped academic.
That's right, and they haven't caught up with me yet, so.
And you write your academic venue is uncannily like East Lansing.
Well, it's a Michiganapolis is a fantasy combination of Lansing and East Lansing, so that it's familiar enough to people who live here, but it's not exactly a portrayal of either one of those towns.
I understand. I keep looking for familiar things, but they're not familiar enough.
It's a parallel universe.
It's a parallel universe, okay. You are an escaped academic who has published in...
I've signed a book contract every year of 10 since I left MSU.
Have you?
Yes. So I actually owe thanks to the people who didn't hire me, rehire me. I haven't figured out how to phrase it. But.
Well, that's nice to have a happy ending.
Yes,
absolutely. Not a successful ending, and you're getting much wider audience than with Edith Wharton Murders, than
right.
with serious...
Right, absolutely.
Bibliographic. By the way, how much of Nick Hoffman are you?
Well, on a good day, maybe 63%. Actually, if to be honest, I am both main characters in the series.
I think
what I've done in the book is split off the dark, serious side for Stefan and the light side for Nick. Hey.
Hello.
There you are.
How's it going?
Good to see you. Hi. Very nice
Jane
to meet
Arnold.
You. Jane,
nice
hello.
She's expecting us to be raucous.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I had orders. Debbie told me before we left that
not
to be
raucous.
She said, now behave yourselves.
We're kind of like that.
She's not fun.
She's not at all.
What happened to her?
We're like the two guys in school that the teachers learn never to seat next to each other.
She's
well, I've got my eyes on both of you.
Good. Wise.
Lauren D. Eskelman has arrived and is joining the interview. We will edit out much of
this. Okay,
so
didn't realize you were rolling.
Yes, we were rolling, but we were expecting you to come. You came out of the fog, I understand.
Yes, I did indeed.
It's very mysterious.
Not too bad. It is wet out there, but yeah, it does put you in kind of a mystery frame of mind.
Yes, it does.
You've come out of the fog before.
I'm still in it, as a matter of fact. Still waiting for that horn.
Well, the first question I had that was intended for both of you, very nice. There's no video in this.
That's right.
Of course, sound effects are always
good,
acceptable.
Yes.
Yes.
Great.
The first question I had that was intended for you both was, how do you describe your novels? Are they mysteries? Are they thrillers? Crime novels?
I think for me, I've chewed over this a long time, and I really think that I think crime novel is the best designation. And this is what they use in Great Britain, I think, which makes a good deal more sense. Because while I do write mysteries, and a lot of my books have mystery, not all of them do, and I think a mystery has to raise and answer its own questions somewhere in the text of the book. And if it doesn't do that, it's not a mystery. So it can be a crime novel without being a mystery. The mystery novels are almost always crime. So I think crime is a broader umbrella. I think it covers a lot of the things I think that both of us are writing about. I often call crime the fifth estate in our society. Mm. And you can't write, I don't think, about modern civilization without crime having some part of it.
I agree with Lauren because the English definition is broad enough to include a novel in which a crime is contemplated and doesn't take place. That would make it, whereas, how else would you define it? So yeah, crime mm-hmm. novel is good.
You've been writing Detroit as a character into mm-hmm. your novels for some time.
Yes.
And your major character is usually a tough guy, Private Eye. What about Detroit has inspired you?
It has. It offers so many facets. Detroit is one of those cities. Of course, it's been with us for nearly, actually longer than the United States of America has been. It's been with us since 1701. And the history of Detroit is the history of the United States of America, for better or worse, and both. But it is one of those places, it's kind of like one of those holographic pictures you see on Rolling Stones tickets. You turn it one direction, you see one picture. You turn it another direction, see an entirely different picture. And that's how it is for Detroit for me. Every time I contemplate a new novel to be set there, I'll think about which of its many facets have I not focused on. And that often is a springboard that gets me started. Because there are so many different, you can talk about the the auto industry, of course, the ethnic underpinnings of the city, the politics, religion. It has more churches than it has jails, almost. And any number of ways that you want to approach a novel, Detroit will give you the opportunity to do that. If you want to go back 100 years, you're writing actually about the American West, because it was the Northwest Territory and it was the farthest area of the frontier in the early part of the last century, and you can take that angle. But if you write about it today, you can take any one of all of the concerns that we think of when we consider ourselves as Americans. All the things that have to do with America and modern society are to be found in the city of Detroit. So I don't find myself ever running out of material as long as I keep using this city.
You're a native Michiganian,
yes.
Michiganian. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's strange. About 6 years ago, the Michigan legislator voted that henceforth we would be known as Michiganians.
I don't like it. I do too.
I kind of like Michigander was the actual proper term. But ever since they voted that in, almost everyone's been using Michigander. So that's kind of something American, too. Just because the legislature says it'll be this way doesn't mean it will be. So.
And many of us are Michigese, I guess.
Yes.
Michigas, right, the crazy ones.
All right, Michigan, yes. You are transplanted.
That's right, I'm a recovering
person
New Yorker.
From Michigan. And, but you use Michigan in it.
Right.
Michigan is not just where it happens in your novels either. You use it for
local color and for in a different way, but with the same intent that Lauren has. I think when Michigan appears in my books, it's because I'm in love with the state and I'm in love with its variety, and I want to paint different pieces of it.
Well, let me go on to some more questions for both of you. What are the problems, benefits of keeping a series going? You're having a third book come out in a series. You've had several series going.
Mm-hmm.
Is it, what, are there any problems?
There are problems. I think one of the main problems, I think, with a series is you have to find a way with each book to give your new readers enough information about your main character.
Mm-hmm.
So that they have enough to go on, but not sound as if you're repeating the same old thing that the readers you've carried from the other books have read before. But on the other side, the advantage for me is after, I usually let my wife, who's my publicist and the best I've ever had, do the counting, but I think at this point, something like 45 books. Despite that, each new book is a pretty frightening proposition. It's something brand new. It's alien territory. And when I know it's going to be, say, an Amos Walker detective novel, character that I've used many times, it's like thinking about going to a party where you know one person who's going to meet you at the door, put a drink in your hand, shake your hand, introduce you around, and meld you into this brand new alien environment, and it makes for a much more comfortable proposition.
Oh, I agree completely. I think the benefit of working with the series is that if you're in love with these characters, why would you want to give them up? And because my character narrates the series, I feel like I'm having a long conversation with him, which is why, the voice is very conversational. Even though someone complained that my English professor made some mistakes in English, and I said to her, a librarian came up to me and I said, he's speaking, he's not teaching. There's a difference. I think that's the advantage. The disadvantage is simply familiarity. I mean, as much as you love these characters, do you want to be writing about them year in and year out? And I think the challenge for any mystery writer or crime writer with a series is to figure out how can he or she make the series interesting. For Lauren, it's looking at different aspects of Detroit. Likewise, people who work with series will tell you they'll give the character a different problem in his or her personal life in each book, or they'll take that person through one problem over a series of books. Could be an illness, it could be a divorce, it could be a family crisis. So you have to work at keeping your level of excitement high with each book, but you have the built-in enjoyment factor of meeting these people again and again at that party.
Mm-hmm.
You must have people tell you that they feel like they know the characters after a while.
I think at this point there are many readers of mine who know more about Amos Walker than I do myself. I remember some time back, about 1983, I think, and John D. MacDonald was appearing at the Bouchercon Mystery Convention in New York City, and I got in
line.
That's
the International Mystery Conference.
Yes.
That's how you pronounce it.
Bouchercon.
Yes.
And I got in line to have, I had some first edition copies of his books to have him sign, and there was a lady in line with me, and she recognized me, and she opened up this big loose leaf folder that she had. She was putting together an encyclopedia of American fictional detectives, and she had all this information on Amos Walker, including his driver's license and his license plate numbers in recent years, things like that, that I didn't remember myself. And I wished I'd kept her number, because there were a couple of years ago, I had to bring back a character, and I couldn't for the life of me remember in which book he was in, so I could get his name right and his description and things like that. And I couldn't find it. So what I had to do is basically I remembered his description, but I gave him a brand new name, so that's going to confuse some people down the line. But I really could have used this lady.
You'll probably hear from her.
I probably will.
Who do you enjoy reading?
Same here. This is not, we're not just smoozing. We were pointing at each other here.
I almost put you on the line and said, do you read each other?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Lauren is someone, when I first started, when I decided to do a series, I started reading mysteries differently. I read them not less for pleasure, but as much to study how they were put together, and Lauren was one of the people I read. I read Lauren, I read Sue Grafton, I read Carolyn G. Hard, obviously I reread Christie, but I read very many, very different writers, and Lauren, a lot of people are compared to Raymond Chandler because he's sort of the gold standard of mystery writers, and I think Lauren does for Detroit and for Michigan what Chandler did for L.A.
Yeah, I like to read Lev, and he's an excellent writer, but particularly for his sense of humor. He has an easy way of using a sense of humor. It bubbles up naturally. It's never forced, and it's real. And the only books that I have no patience with are by writers that have no discernible sense of humor whatsoever. I think
your books are funny too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, it kind of bubbles up unexpectedly. There's only one time when I sat down actually to write humor, and it was kind of a takeoff in Private Eye novels I did some years ago called Peeper, about a sleazy Detroit private eye who was like the opposite number of Amos Walker. Every ethical standard that Amos Walker upholds are news to Ralph Poteet, and I found that, and I was pretty happy with the result, but it was literally like pulling nails with my toes, because you're a stand-up comic without an audience, and you don't know if the jokes are going over. Very difficult thing to do.
Well, didn't Ian Forster say that whenever you read something of your own and you laughed, you should cut it? He called those a writer's darlings.
Kill your darlings, yes.
Kill them.
I think it was Sam Johnson who said, when you're reading your work and you come across something that you really enjoy reading, cut it out immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of bloodthirsty. I don't know that I've met a writer who can actually do that.
Yes.
And I doubt, having read Sam Johnson, that he did either.
Well, if you do cut it out, you have to save it for another book.
Right, that's right. Never throw anything away.
Never.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're out of time. But I want to thank you both very, very much for engaging in this interview. And
thank you for having us.
Thanks for having
us.
And
right.
Let's hope this isn't the last time.
Well, we'll be back next week. And
okay.
Right. Yeah.